brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you? Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. This is Stuff You Should Know, and I'm Josh Clark, and that's Chuck Bryant. Right, Chuck?
That's a very formal introduction, Josh. I like it.
Should I loosen up a little bit, man?
No, you're good.
Chuck, you remember we were talking about, like, the worst way to die in a podcast several podcasts back?
Uh-huh.
And I said, for me, the worst way to die would be a plane crash.
Right.
Because you're on your way down, and you're fully aware the whole time, probably, of what's about to happen. I can't think of anything worse than dying in a plane crash,
right,
personally.
With a bunch of strangers.
Yeah. You know, you don't want to die with people you don't know.
No way.
Okay, so one of the reasons I said that was because I've had a terrible experience on a plane. And nothing really untoward happened, like there wasn't a lot of turbulence or anything like that. But I found out the hard way that I'm actually afraid of flying.
Okay.
Most of the time when I fly, it's to, you know, if I fly at all, it's to Europe or to Mexico or something like that, right? So it's a long flight.
Okay.
I'll take a Klonopin and, you know, drink some scotch, and then that's it. I wake up, and I'm where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah, it's like a time travel machine to you.
Pretty much, yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, so, and it works like a champ, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is I'm never conscious or at the very least cognizant or, you know, doing anything but drooling the whole way.
Right. You're that guy. I know,
right,
that guy.
Well, on the way back, actually from Mexico, we had a layover in Miami. I had no pharmaceuticals. And didn't have, I think it was a cash bar flight.
Ugh.
I didn't have any money. Yeah, what's the point?
Yeah.
I just shelled out like half of my life savings for this flight from Miami to Atlanta.
Yeah.
And you can't give me liquor for free, right?
Right.
All right, so anyway, this perfect storm of horribleness transpires. And I'm in the air, and all the way from Miami to Atlanta, I'm just completely convinced over and over again the plane's about to go down, right? And I was actually looking up how fear works, right?
Right.
And I found out that when you have a fear response, there's two things going on.
Okay.
Number one is this real quick knee-jerk reaction that alerts you to danger, and our old friend, the fight or flight response,
right,
perks up. And then you've got a more thoughtful process that takes a little longer, that's really analyzing context and stuff like that. And then if it concludes you're not in danger, it tells your hypothalamus to settle down.
Be rational.
Right.
Okay.
And then you calm down.
Right.
But this kept happening over and over and over again. So for 3 hours, it was like every 20 seconds I was cresting the hill of a roller coaster.
Wow.
It was one of the worst things that ever happened to me. So a lesson learned, as far as I'm concerned, I'll never travel unprepared again.
Uh-huh.
But it turns out, from what I understand, that the chances of me actually going down in a plane,
right,
this isn't, facts and figures don't make me feel any better at all.
That's
but,
true.
But rationally speaking, I have a very little chance of going down in a plane, don't
right.
I?
Right, yeah. About, you want to know the number?
Hell yeah.
Are you speculating?
No. I know that you know. I was setting you up right there.
Yeah, that's a good one. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Your chances of dying, or I'm sorry, not even dying, your chances of even being involved in an airline crash are 1 in 11 million. And when you compare that to your chances of actually being killed in a car, and this is the one you always hear, airline versus car, are 1 in 5,000.
But for some reason, I don't know, maybe it's because I'm not driving the plane,
that's
so
exactly
I have no
right.
control over it.
That's
in a car,
exactly right.
I can maybe steer my way out of it.
Yep, that's,
do you think
that's
what it is?
Well, that's one of the big reasons. It's not me thinking this. It's, you know, people have studied this, and the lack of control has a huge part it plays. As well as the fact that negative bias. So a plane crash gets a lot of coverage.
Sure, yeah.
So it
point.
Seems like they're dropping out of the sky with regularity because they don't, you know, cover the news. The news doesn't cover car crashes like it
not,
does plane
no,
crashes.
No, you're definitely not going to see that on the NBC Nightly News.
No.
That's true. I've got another way of looking at it with numbers.
Okay.
Do you know you would have to fly on an airline every day for 35,000 years to be guaranteed that you're going to be in a plane crash?
That
for it
is
to become inevitable.
That is an awesome, awesome stat.
Isn't it? That one came from airdisaster.com, and
uh-huh.
That is a site that I would never recommend anyone go to
yeah.
if you have a fear of flying.
Yeah, or if you don't, because you soon will.
Yeah, exactly.
I like to fly. It doesn't freak me out at all. Actually, I don't like to fly. I hate to fly, but it has nothing to do with fear of crashing.
What is just the long process of it?
Yeah, the process.
Taking
and being,
off your shoes and the security check.
Oh, I hate that. And being stuck on the plane next to people and touching strangers and people are obnoxious and the smells and I hate it, man.
You're not a club rubber, huh? You don't like touching strangers?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, good to know. See, little by little.
A club rubber. I've never heard that.
I'll explain it later.
Okay.
Okay. Well, all right. We understand that there's very little chance that you're going to get into a plane wreck. Right?
True. But they still happen.
It does happen. Some people have a much closer relationship with fate and coincidence and chance than others. So let's say one of our listeners finds himself or herself in a plane that's going down.
Right.
There's some things that you may or may not want to do. And actually, before you even board, when you're booking a ticket, there's some stuff you want to take into consideration, right?
Very true.
Well, like what?
Well, before we get to that real quick, people should know, just because your plane crashes doesn't mean you'll die either.
You're so reassuring.
I know. In fact, between 1980 and 2000, there were 568 crashes in the U.S., and more than 90% of them survived.
That's crazy.
Most of these, I have to say this, were takeoff and landing crashes. But of the 26 extreme crashes, and I think that means you're at 33,000 feet and then you go to 0 feet, you have more than a 50% chance of surviving that even.
I would lose my mind.
Yeah.
I would lose my mind as I was walking away from that.
You would. So having said that, if you are on a plane and you're a fan of ours and you're going down, we feel very bad for you. But
for future you.
For future
unless you're
you.
Actually listening to this on a plane that's going down. If so,
wow.
Hats off to you.
Right.
You've really achieved the, you know, trifecta. Yeah. I don't know what the other two things are, but they're the other one.
The first thing most people want to find out about is there a safest seat?
Yeah, and is there?
Well, it depends on who you ask. If you ask the FAA, their official stance is no, there's not a safest seat.
Well, sure.
Exactly. That's what I think, is they can't really say that because people be like, I'm not sitting there.
Exactly,
the FAA
yeah.
says I'm gonna
die. I don't want to sit in anything but the safe seat.
Exactly.
This is a death seat.
But people study this stuff like you wouldn't believe. In Popular Mechanics, Great Magazine did a study, and over a 36-year period, they studied data of plane crashes, commercial jet crashes in the United States, and passengers in the rear of a plane are, in fact, by their data, 40% more likely to survive than those in toward the front of the plane.
It's pretty significant.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess any of you guys out there who are about to book plane tickets, look for the back of the plane.
Look for the back of the plane.
Let all the people like who don't listen to this podcast die.
Right. People like sitting up front, though, because you get to deboard. Is deboard, is that a word?
You get disembark.
Disembark yes. off the plane quicker. And no one likes standing in that long line where everyone
pulls
their stuff down.
They also die. Which one is it? You know,
exactly.
You have to hear bye-bye, bye-bye like a few more times than the people in the front, but you're going to survive if the plane goes down.
True. So I've got some tips for you, though. If you're on a plane, before the crash ever happens, there's a few things you can do to improve your chances.
Yeah.
You ready?
Yes.
And this is something I actually, after I wrote this article, I started doing this stuff.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah, man.
Nice.
Definitely. I mean, I don't believe in bad luck and jinxes, but I thought I was jinxed.
Really?
After I wrote this, yeah. I thought, I'm the guy that wrote the article, and then I'm going to be the one, ironically, that perishes, you know, from 33,000 feet. So once you're on board, get to your seat, find the exit row. This is a no-brainer, but here's a little trick. What you want to do is you want to count how many rows are between you and the exit row and cement that number in your head, even if you're hopped up on pharmaceuticals and scotch.
Right.
So if you count 11 rows to the exit row, a lot of times you might be in the dark. You might be underwater. You know, think about that.
No.
You can feel the seats and feel 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 up through 11. And then, you know, you take a left or a right and you're at your exit.
Right. And don't be misled by, you know, a detached arm. You know, if you're in the dark, know the difference between a detached arm and a plane seat.
Right. I did not put that tip in the article. I should have. The crash position has changed over the years, and not a lot of people know this, which
yeah,
I think is
interesting. Yeah, what's the deal? Did you get an impression of why the crash position changed?
Well, my hope is that it's to make it more likely that you'll survive.
Well, yeah.
I hope there weren't politics or money behind it or anything like that. But I think you used to put your head between your legs and cover your between your knees and cover your head.
Yeah.
Now, that's not true. What you're supposed to do is you're supposed to extend your arms. Put your hands, cross your hands over each other and put them against the seat back in front of you. And then put your head against the back of your hands. So you've got your arms stretched out and pressed against the seat in front of you and your head resting on the back of your hands. That's the new official crash position.
Yeah. No, I could actually see the lobby of the in-flight magazine publishers association having that changed, you know?
Right.
You're going down like, wow, I can get that for that cheap.
I want to know who does the artwork on those things. It's awesome. It's always the same, and there's like there's probably one dude in Vermont that does all that artwork.
For what?
For the in-flight little brochure you get.
Oh, the Calm as Hindu Cows people, the graphics. I love that drawing, but yeah, it's very standard, sure. Vermont, huh?
Here's a little tip for you. Before you get on the plane, you should dress appropriately. I know that sounds silly. If you're going to Maui, you want to have on your Hawaiian shirt and your flip-flops. Mm-hmm. But after a plane crash, there's glass everywhere, there's jet fuel, there's fire. Mm-hmm. You're going to want to be covered. So you should never wear open-toed shoes. You should wear long sleeves and a long-sleeve shirt as well.
Yeah, it makes sense.
If you're smart. Many people won't heed this advice, though, because, like I said, they want to be comfy on, you know, the transcontinental flights. If you have a family, say you and your wife have like three or four kids, and you're getting on the plane, you want to divide the responsibility up between the parents.
Sure.
Because it's a lot harder for one, like the father, to try and wrangle four family members, and you might get separated. So dad's in charge of little Timmy and Johnny, and mom's in charge of Sue and Jane.
Yeah, and if you have a lazy spouse, you may want to reconsider flying as a family.
Right, that's a good idea.
You know, because everything may be on your shoulders, yeah.
And listen, and this is a big one, listen to the pre-flight instructions. I know that's typically, I guess, you're trying to get your scotch. I'm annoyed with the people on both sides of myself.
Yeah.
But this is when you need to be listening, because all planes are different, and there actually are some variations in instruction, depending on what kind of
I never knew that, actually. Yeah. I thought it was all the same, so it's good advice, Chuck.
No. And if the oxygen mask drops, you know you're in trouble, put it on yourself first. And if you love your wife more than life itself, you may have an instinct to put it on her, but you have to save yourself first before you can save anyone else, is the general thinking.
Wow.
Yeah. So those are a few
Darwinistic,
tips.
That last one.
Yeah.
Save yourself.
Save yourself so you can save others.
Right. Okay. Well, Chuck, yes. As you were saying, there's a substantial percentage of people who are in serious crashes that have survived, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was one specific one was made into a movie, one plane crash, right?
Yeah.
What was it called? Survive?
Are you talking about the...
Alive?
Yes.
There's some Ive?
I think it's Alive.
Okay. The Uruguayan rugby team?
Uh-huh.
You want to tell them about that?
I thought you were.
Oh, okay. Well, actually...
this is your favorite story.
It's a great story, and it's a great movie, too, actually. This Uruguayan soccer team probably should have known... or rugby team, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
They probably should have known they were on a plane for Chile. And they were in the Andes Mountains, which is like just the... They should call those things the Widowmakers.
There's a lot of crashes there.
Yeah. It was Friday, October 13th, which if there's a day to not fly, it's that day.
Why is that?
Friday the 13th in October, that's a bad day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's bad
not
luck.
Good.
Sorry.
Sure. Yeah. Okay, so their plane goes down, right? There's 45 people on board. It's not just the rugby team, but there's some others. Basically for, I think, 72 days.
Wow.
The survivors, some of them slowly died off. I think 12 initially died in the crash. And then over the course of time, another 10 died over the next 72 days.
Right.
They didn't have any food or anything. So they ended up very famously resorting to cannibalism.
Right. Which
before
is your
they were finally fined. Yeah. Well, you know I love cannibalism.
I know.
The movie was Alive.
Uh-huh.
Made
Ethan
in 1993. We hear rumors that there may be a follow-up documentary about it coming. They're unsubstantiated, but keep an eye out for it.
I think there has been a previous documentary at some point, too.
Yeah, well, they just had like some reunion, I believe. What was it? The maybe 25th reunion or something? Or the 35th reunion? Because a lot of these guys are still alive.
Oh, yeah.
And they reunited for, you know, I don't want to ever be around you people again tour.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
All right, but okay, so what other things can you do to, you know, maybe stay alive besides cannibalism, unless you're forced to resort to it?
Right. Well, let's say your plane has crashed and you're on the ground. The first 90 seconds is vital.
The golden what?
They call that golden time.
Okay.
And airlines are responsible for getting everyone off in those 90 seconds. That's the goal.
Okay.
For the airline industry. So that's what you really need to be concerned about. There's going to be fire, potentially, jet fuel, nasty stuff burning. So you want to get down low because the fumes from this stuff is more likely to kill you than being burned.
Sure, yeah. I mean, what are airplane seat covers made of?
Yeah, exactly.
Not good stuff.
Nothing you want to put in your pipe and smoke, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, you've got all this nasty, toxic stuff in the air, so you want to get low, just like they teach you at home, you know, stop, drop, and roll.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's if you're on fire. Yeah. But they teach you to get down to go under the smoke.
Right.
Same principle here. If you do make it off the plane, which is the ideal scenario, you want to get the heck away from there because it could blow up. It could, you know, any number of things could happen. So you want to get as far away from the plane as you can safely and get behind something if there's something there. If there's, you know, a huge rock or a big tree. I mean, you just want to try and shield yourself in case there's a big explosion.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And do not try and get your baggage off your carry-on bags.
It's a good. What if you have your pet on board?
Boy, you're asking the wrong guy. I would try and save my pet.
Sure.
But they say no matter what it is, leave it behind. It's not worth it.
Yeah.
And man, I wasn't anticipating that.
Yeah, that'd be a rough.
You really
one.
Caught
that'd
me off guard there.
Sure. Yeah.
Luckily, my pets don't fly, so I won't ever have to deal with that. They also say don't drink.
I saw that. And yeah. I just can't.
Okay, well.
I can't.
The choice is yours.
I can't fly
right.
Normal.
Right.
Yeah, so.
That makes sense. I don't like to drink aboard a flight. It kind of, I don't know, I don't like it. Something about the pressure and maybe it's the expense and those little bottles. I don't get into it.
I love those little bottles.
They also say not to inflate your life vest until you're outside the cabin because.
Good advice.
Yeah, it can restrict your movement.
Which you don't want when you're running out of a plane on fire.
No, you don't want to be at the exit and then your life vest gets hung on the seat before the explosion.
Yeah.
And I think that's about all the tips I have for you, Josh.
Well, you know, I do have one more thing, Chuck.
What's that?
People who survive plane crashes actually tend to score better on emotional quotient tests, things like post-traumatic symptoms,
right,
than people who have not been in plane crashes. They actually score significantly higher. There was a 1999 Old Dominion University study of 15 crash survivors across the United States. And these people just basically had a more positive outlook on life and didn't show the signs of stress like these people who served as a control group
right.
Who flew, I think, 5 times a year or more and who'd never been in a plane crash.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. They theorized that it was because they'd been through this huge ordeal, and they kind of learned not to sweat the small stuff.
Yeah, seriously.
It makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And people, again, who had shown control, who were in control,
right,
like you were suggesting, they actually had the highest score of all. If they thought of themselves as having stayed in control or maybe helped somebody off the plane.
Right.
Apparently, you just cannot have a better outlook on life than if you've helped someone off a burning plane when you survived a plane crash.
Wow.
So let's seek it out.
I wish I knew what that feeling kind of felt like.
Yeah, kind of, but at the same time, kind of like...
Kind of not.
Yeah, exactly.
There's just one more quickie, Josh.
We will never let these listeners go.
I would be remiss if I didn't say that try to stay calm. That's the number one thing you can do. Because panic, people can't even unbuckle their seatbelt many times because they're in such a state of panic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, stay calm.
Yeah.
If you can.
Chuck, you may have just saved some lives.
Wow.
You should feel good about yourself.
Well, if we have any plane crash survivors that survived because of my advice, please let me know. And I might feel like that guy that saved the person from the burning
plane. Yeah. Talk about a positive outlook on life. And before we let you go, let us just give you a little peek at what Chuck and I think is the coolest article on the site. It's called Do We Really Get Wiser With Age?
Yeah.
It is by our colleague, writer Molly Edmonds, who's just a dynamo. And her article is super cool,
too. She is a dynamo.
She really is. And her article is super cool, too. So both Chuck and I give that one the thumbs up and strongly recommend it. And you can find that article, How to Survive a Plane Crash. Chuck's written a whole slew of survival articles. And you can find them all by typing some clever words into the search bar at howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?